It's funny the things you forget. I went to see my mother the other day, and she told me this story that I'd completely forgotten about, how when we were driving together, she would pull the car over. And by the time she had got out the car and gone round the car to let me out the car, I would have already got out the car and pretended to have died. Because that's how you die. And I remember that was a game I used to play with myself to entertain myself whenever I was bored or frustrated. Settle down. People say we live in an age of information overload, right? I don't know about that, but I just know that I get too many marketing emails. I got a marketing email from a supermarket firm, which will remain nameless for predominantly legal reasons, but which I'm going to call Safemart. I got an email from them, and it went like this. It said, just 3 weeks until Safemart at King's Cross opens. And I resented this, because not only do I not remember signing up to that, but I resent the fact that they appear to think that I should be excited about a shop opening. So what I did is I scrolled down to the bottom of the email, and I pressed unsubscribe. And I thought that'd be the end of it. But a week later, I got another one that said, just 2 weeks until Safemart at King's Cross opens. And I thought, well, obviously, I haven't clicked hard enough, right? So I tried it again, right? Lo and behold, a week passes, you guessed it, just 1 week until Safemart at King's Cross opens. And here's the problem. The internet gave us access to everything. But it also gave everything access to us. You know, I think, right, it's hard enough to discriminate between the things that genuinely matter in this world and, you know, the minutiae of life without having emails about supermarket chains and Candy Crush saga. And I was really annoyed with them, and I thought, okay, I was about to write a strongly worded email, which I can do quite well. And I thought, no, I'm going to find the game. So I replied to it, and I said, I literally cannot wait. What do you need from me? They go back to me. This guy called Dan said, hi, James, I've asked a colleague to help me with your query. Like it needs help. I said, what's the plan, Dan? I'm thinking fireworks, bouncy castle. I'm not sure what you mean. I said, I'm just tremendously excited about the opening. Do you want to put the bouncy castle, or shall I? He said, I think you have misunderstood. A new store is opening, but there is no celebration plan. I said, but what was all the 3 weeks until, 2 weeks until emails? I was getting excited. I'm sorry you're disappointed. I said, not to worry. Let's do something anyway. Besides, the deposit on the bouncy castle was non-refundable. If we don't use it, we're out a few hundred quid, Dan. He said, Mr. Veach, I'm not responsible for anything you have ordered. I said, let's not get into who did what. Bottom line, you and I are in this together. Question, would you be there to make sure people take their shoes off? And I'll be honest, then my relationship with Dan deteriorated somewhat, because the next email I got was this. Thanks for your email, your case number is... Oh, it's outrageous. I said, Dan? And I got... And I was just like, this is... And I said, Danny! And he just kept going, and I thought... This is terrible. All I'm doing is collecting case numbers. I said, D-Dog? The store is now open. I said, but Dan, you must have wondered why there was no bouncy castle. And then we were back to this. And that might have been the end of the story. But I remembered that anything, everything, even something as mundane as getting out of a car, can be fun if you find the right game. So, this is what I replied. And we just, it was like we were dancing. It was just a beautiful relationship. We just kept going, and it was lovely. But to be honest, guys, it was quite labor intensive, and you know, I had other stuff to do, believe it or not. And so what I did is I have a little email auto-replier program. And what I did is I set it up so every time it receives an email from SafeMart, it just pings one back, right? So I set it up and it says, thanks for your email, your case number is, and then it has a little formula that I wrote to up the case number every time. And I put it on the server and set it running. I'll be honest, guys, then I forgot about it. I checked back on it the other day. And it appears there being a number of emails going back and... We're on 21,400. It gives me an immense sense of satisfaction to know that these computer programs are just going to be pinging one another, you know, for eternity. And as legacies go, I don't think that's bad. So guys, just remember, right, if ever you feel weighed down by the, you know, the bureaucracy and often mundanity of modern life, don't fight the frustration. Let it be the catalyst for whimsy. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
So I don't know about you guys, but I want to be James Veitch's friend. How many of you want to be his friend? He has another great video about responding to spam email. If you like that, you'll like his other emails or his other TED Talk about spam as well. Why did I show this video? Well, first of all, it was to make me not have to prepare as much, because I don't have to talk as much. Actually, we're so far ahead in the service that I can preach a normal sermon. So I'm going to lengthen what I plan to say by a tad. So hopefully it doesn't get boring, because that's kind of the opposite of what I want to do this morning. We're talking about what does it mean to be salt of the earth? What does it mean to be the light of the world as Jesus called his people and said that his people are supposed to be? And we looked last week at one particular aspect of what salt does. And we looked at in Jesus' day, one of the main aspects of salt is that it is a preservative. It allowed them to keep food from spoiling for longer than just keeping food without putting salt on it. And so they would pack it in salt, and the salt would absorb and kind of monopolize the use of the water in whatever it was that they were packing in salt, and then that water wasn't able to be used by mold or bacteria. And so it kept the food fresh, especially meat they would do this with. But we know today that not only is salt used as a preservative, but what is our main use of salt today as we see it kind of in our normal everyday lives? How do we use salt, somebody? As a flavoring, as a seasoning. Now, what would you describe salt does to food? What does it do to food when you flavor food with salt or you season food with salt? Someone said it tastes good. What did you say over here? Someone say it louder. It enhances. That is such a great word. That's exactly what I was looking for. I remember learning when I was a kid that you could put salt on sweet things like watermelon, or you could put it on other kinds of fruits, and it would actually enhance the sweetness of the fruit and make the fruit taste better. How many of you guys know that and have done that before? Did it blow your minds as much as it did when I was like 8 or something and learned that? It was amazing to me that this thing that when you taste it is not sweet at all. When you put it on something sweet, it would enhance the flavor. Well, if we as Christians are called to be the salt of the earth, then no doubt in Jesus' mind, he had an intention to say we should be people who season life. That as Christians, we should be people who enhance life. We should make life better for other people. Now, I fully believe that this means that Christians should be the funnest people, most joyful people, most celebratory people on the planet. How many of you think that that's the way Christians should be? That's about right in terms of how many of you act like that. No, I'm just joking. It should be that way. I believe that it should be that way. I believe that when people view our lives and don't even know that you're a Christian and you attend church, a coworker, a neighbor, somebody you run into in the grocery store, when they see you, they should think, why is that person so joyful? Why does that person seem to be enjoying life more than I'm enjoying life? They should be asking that question because we Christians should experience joy in a way that the rest of the world doesn't experience joy. Now, here's a couple things I want to talk about with salt being seasoning, we Christians being seasoning in this world. The first thing I want to talk about is Christians and beauty. Now, we Christians have to be careful with this term because we don't want to be trapped and stuck into the world's definition of beauty. We don't want to be in part of the system that photoshops imperfections out of people and things like that and focuses on external or vain aesthetic of beauty in human beings. But we want to focus on true beauty, God's beauty. How many of you have experienced, you think in your life, God's beauty in some way? Raise your hand. Anybody want to share a moment of experiencing God's beauty? Bert Ebi, would you share? Many of you, some of you know that I once was a youth minister in a church, El Montecito Presbyterian Church in Santa Barbara. Many of you might recognize that word because it was in the news a lot this last week. There was a huge mudslide there. And quite a few people lost their lives. Hundreds of homes were lost. And one of my students, one of my old students who still lives there, posted a picture of Montecito from kind of an overview. And right behind the city, I mean, there's just all this destruction, but right behind the city was this beautiful rainbow. And they just made a comment about God's goodness, even in the midst of tragedy. What a wonderful symbol there of the juxtaposition of God's beauty despite sometimes the terror of this world. Anybody over here want to share something? I've kind of like ruined the lead-in probably. Alan? Yeah, if you've never been to Bryce Canyon or even Zion National Park, I have never been awestruck more than driving through accidentally when we moved across the country. We drove through Zion National Park because we missed our turn. And it was just some of the most beautiful, gorgeous landscape that I've ever seen in my entire life. Bob? Yeah, it is amazing. I remember as a teenager, I was about 17, 18 years old, and I would go skiing, or actually snowboarding, every single week with my youth pastor, who I worked for. I was his intern. And I remember sitting on the ski lifts, and it was my favorite time. Even though I loved snowboarding, and I loved trail riding, and being in the backcountry, and just on the fluffiest, most wonderful snow that you Michiganders don't know anything about, and just floating down in the most free feeling, floating down. But the most beautiful time was sitting on the lift and just looking out over God's creation. And we would just sit there in silence, and both of us would be awestruck at the beauty that God had created around us. Now, Jesus said these words in telling us not to worry. He said, consider the lilies, how they grow, how they neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not clothed like one of these. Jesus was well aware, because he was the creator, of the beauty that he wove intricately into his creation. He was well aware that he made things to be beautiful. And in fact, I would say that Jesus considers everything to contain some form of beauty because he created it to have his beauty as a part of it. And so Jesus was well aware of the beauty of this world. We Christians should be well aware. We should be more aware of the beauty in this existence than anyone else. Because we ourselves have been shown one of the most beautiful acts anything in all of human history has ever been explained, and that is that Jesus Christ came and died on the cross for us and gave us freedom from our own rebellion, our own sin, and our own trap in death. And so our eyes should be open to not just the beauty of that salvation act, but to all of God's intention of beauty in all of creation. We should see things like no one else sees things. We should savor things like no one else savors things. And in fact, Christians have been doing this for years. Christians have created some of the most magnificent pieces of artwork visually that have ever been created on this earth. Pieces of artwork that are celebrated by cultures and nations around the world that display the gospel and display God's creation. Christians have been inspired to create. Christians for centuries have built gigantic halls and cathedrals with great sculptures and stained glass windows and marble architecture, all for the purpose of showing God's beauty. This building that we're sitting in ourselves was designed, was made to highlight the beauty of God, not only in the design, but that it would draw us out into God's natural creation and leave us to be inspired at the beauty of the God we serve. How wonderful. How wonderful is it each week that we get to hear the music of such accomplished musicians like Brenda, who plays this beautiful instrument that makes noises. I mean, do you guys understand the mechanics of this machine up here? It sends wind through pipes, and that vibrates the air at different rates so that our ears pick it up and we think that it's pleasing. Isn't that weird? It's weird. But we all listen to it and we're inspired by it, right? We all listen to it and we think that is gorgeous, that is beautiful. Listen to the way those notes flow in the intention of the person who wrote it, and we are brought to a sense of awe at the beauty of a sound. All because we Christians believe that God built beauty into his creation because he himself is the standard of beauty. Christians should understand, should highlight, and should exhibit beauty to the world. Not the same kind of beauty that the world tries to highlight, but the real kind of beauty that God has built into his creation. Second thing, Christians in wonder. You guys have heard me say this before, but I believe Christians should be the people who are filled with the most wonder of the world around them over anybody else. In fact, I think we should be irritatingly wonder-filled. Jesus says this. He says that truly I tell you, unless you change and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. How many of you have been able to watch children as they grow up in some form? It doesn't mean that you were their parents, but you've been close enough to children to be able to watch children as they grow. Raise your hand. Would you describe children as filled with wonder or not filled with wonder? Filled with wonder. Just look at this picture. Here's a field full of wheat, and there's this little boy who's just filled with wonder at it. How many of us see a field of wheat and go, "Wah!" Not very many of us. Have you ever seen a child discover an ant for the first time? What is their response to the ant? Is it just like, ants again, crush? You know, is that the way they react, or what do they do? They sit and they study it, right? They look at it. They get down on their hands and their knees, and they follow the ant around, and they're just amazed at this little creature that would be walking around in their kitchen or whatever. And then their mothers quickly teach them to stamp out God's creation by killing them with Raid. Sorry, Stacy, I didn't mean to share your secrets. Children are filled with wonder, and I think when Jesus tells us that unless we become like a child, we won't enter the kingdom of heaven, I think part of that is he's saying unless we begin to reimagine the world around us, re-experience the world around us like children experience it, then we will not get the picture God is trying to paint for us. We won't understand the kingdom. There are things in this world that are so magnificent, so large, so beyond our comprehension, like nebula in space, big gaseous clouds of material that are falling in on each other and becoming, now am I getting this right, Bert? They're becoming stars, nebula form into stars that later began to form solar systems around them. And life potentially is out there around these different stars. We know of at least one planet that has life, right? Ours. Even thinking about our own star is mind-boggling. And it immediately begins to bring us to a sense of awe and wonder. But as Christians, I think that it shouldn't take something so big and so magnificent to make us wonder. I think that every time we see an ant going about its business, we should be brought to a sense of wonder about God's creation. We should be brought to a sense of awe and the magnificence of God, not only in the biggest things in this universe, but also in the smallest things in this universe. And we should be in awe over everything we get the privilege to experience. Christians and kindness. I think that one of the best ways Christians can help be a seasoning for life is if we were as kind to others as Jesus is kind to us. If we exhibited and showed the kind of kindness that Jesus showed while he was here on this earth, if you were honest and you reflected and thought hard enough about your own life, you would recognize that he's kind to you today. If we were to act in kind like that towards others, that we would enhance life for others, wouldn't we? Jesus says this in Luke, and was our other passage this week, but love your enemies. Do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, for he is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful just as your Father is merciful. That means be kind to people who aren't even kind to you. Treat people with mercy who would no sooner crush you under their feet if it was an advancement to them. And when we act like this, we begin to flavor reality with a goodness that enhances life and enhances the world. This is one of the reasons why the movie Pay It Forward was so popular, right? This idea that pass it on. You know, if you have a goodness passed on to you, pass that goodness on and it multiplies. Well, we as Christians, we should be the catalyst of all goodness in this earth. We should be the people who express kindness and mercy and patience and forgiveness at greater degrees than anyone else, so that we're so known for it that if somebody expresses this kind of kindness or this kind of patience, even the most staunch atheist would immediately look at them and think, "You're a Christian, aren't you?" You laugh because it's not true right now, right? In fact, it might even be the opposite. If you're the most nasty person and judgmental, they probably think, "You're a Christian, aren't you?" But we should be the type of people who inspire the kind of goodness that Jesus came to create and make possible through his death and his resurrection. We should be the people who are the spark, the catalyst for all goodness in this world, because we want to pay forward the grace, mercy, patience, and kindness that Jesus gave to us. So what are we doing? Not just as a church. I mean, it's not just the church's programming that is responsible to be kind for you. We are an expression of your ministry because you are part of this community, and the money that you give, the time you give, and gifts you give to support the ministry here helps to go out in the kindness that our church does in the community around us. But you have a responsibility individually to act in kindness to the people you come across daily. To think about the kindness that you've received and you didn't deserve. And maybe even you've squandered. and respond to that kindness by giving in kindness to those who are in need around you. If we do these things, if we highlight beauty, if we see the world in a new way and are inspired with awe at all things, and if we act with kindness towards others like we have received kindness, then we will be salt of the earth, a seasoning that will enhance the flavor of goodness that God has built into his creation so that all will come to know him and his goodness, and all will enjoy that goodness with us for eternity.